Today we will continue covering Daniel chapter 6, which is the famous chapter about Daniel in the lion's den. And here in this chapter, we have this King Darius who foolishly signs this decree that we're about. He hasn't signed it as far as what we've covered yet, but he's about to sign this law that's going to come back in biting. And he's going to regret this, that says that no one can pray to a god or man for 30 days except King Darius. And I guess it was just his ego that said, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And this is for 30 days. So for a month, everyone had to only pray to him. Then after that, then they could do what they wanted to do. Daniel, of course, as soon as he hears this, he pushes the envelope, which since his early days, since he was young, even when he was still in Jerusalem, prayed three times a day, but he's continued this all these years. And now he's in his 80s, and so he immediately goes and prays, but he opens up these windows so everyone can see him. But this is nothing out of the ordinary. He always did this, and his window opened toward Jerusalem. And it was Kaufman kind of thought that they started this with this exile into Babylon, that they would always, these Israelites would pray to the west, pray toward Jerusalem. And then Kaufman thought that when they were in Jerusalem, they made it a habit to pray toward the temple. And so anyway, Daniel is doing what his custom has been all of this time, but he opens these windows up, and of course, you've got at least these two other governors with him. See, there are three governors that are just under King Darius, and Daniel is one of these. And out of jealousy, because the king was seriously thinking about making Daniel the sole prime minister, and that's what got this jealousy raised up, and they're wanting Daniel to be executed. And so they've come up with this plan, and they first tried to find Daniel doing something wrong, but they couldn't find him doing anything wrong. He wasn't violating any laws. He wasn't doing anything incorrectly. So they couldn't catch him on anything. They said the only way we're going to be able to catch him is with his worshiping his God. And so this is what they deviously devised to have him executed. And it would have worked fine for them, except they just did not realize the power that God, and that God was a true supreme being. They were used to all of these false gods that they worshiped that was nothing, never did a thing in the world for them because they're all imaginary. And they didn't realize that there was one true and living God that was not imaginary, and that's the one that Daniel was serving, and he's going to send his angel to save him from this execution the same way as he had sent an angel to save Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego maybe 20 or 30 or whatever years earlier, maybe 40 years earlier, from the fiery furnace. Okay, so we will start here with verse 6 of Daniel chapter 6. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, they're making a false statement here because they did not consult all of the governors. In fact, they left out one-third of the governors. Daniel had no part in any of this. So, and then we'll see in verse 13 that they don't even mention Daniel as being one of the governors. They refer to him as one of the captives from Judah. So he's just a slave, even though he is essentially second in command of the this Babylonian territory, sharing the second in command with these other two governors just underneath the king. But they refer to him as just a captive. That's all that he is. They're so jealous of him and want to demean him so much. So they misrepresented this to King Darius, and I imagine that's part of the reason why he signed this, thinking, well, Daniel is in on this too, so he must have been fine with it because they told me they consulted everyone. Well, they didn't consult Daniel. He just hears about it after the fact. Verse 8, "Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. So he foolishly signed this. But as I read from what Kaufman wrote last week, he made two mistakes out of one. He made a mistake here by signing it, but he should not have doubled down and then executed Daniel over this. He should have stopped and said, "No, I made a mistake. I never should have signed this, and now I'm going to deal with whatever consequences come for me breaking this Persian law, and we'll just go from there." And the example that Kaufman gave that I read last week was these people signed up their children to go to this denominational school, and then they realized that they were teaching false doctrine, but they'd signed a contract with this school, and they did not pull them out. And so they kept those children and in this false doctrine teaching. And so they should have never have done that. They should have pulled, as soon as they realized that it was false teaching in this school, they should have pulled those children out and then broke the contract and paid whatever penalty for breaking the contract. And which Kaufman calls this a wicked commitment that both Darius got himself into, as well as these parents with this denominational school. So, but unfortunately he doesn't. He continues on and he compounds, makes two mistakes out of one. Number 10, verse 10. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home." Okay, so he's going home immediately and he's pushing the envelope right here. "And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." So he's done this. His parents taught him to do this. And even though he's been exiled and been away from his parents now for, say, 70 years, he is still doing the same thing that his parents taught him to do. Verse 11. "Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God." Now, Daniel could have gotten away with having the death sentence pronounced on him. He could have just kept his window shut and they would not have known. But he was always opened up his windows, so he just continued with what he normally did. He wasn't trying to hide anything or do anything differently. But see, these other governors, these other two jealous governors that wanted him ousted, knew that they would be able to see him, and everyone, all the whole community would be able to see him because he was right here in the window praying toward to the west, toward Jerusalem, and they would there would be no dispute that he's violating this ordinance. So then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Verse 12, and they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. And they wanted to always make sure this is an unalterable or inalterable law. You cannot change it. Well, Kaufman said he signed a wicked decree and he should have broken it and then dealt with the consequences or whatever it took on the back end, and not convict and condemn an innocent man here over this due to jealousy. But anyway, he didn't, but he regrets it, and God takes care of it on the back end. Verse 13, so they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, see, they do not say, he's one of our fellow governors, and what the commentators feel, Kaufman for sure, and then also Don Simpson, that It's these two co-governors with him that are the ones that are pushing the envelope. These other satraps, these 120 other like mayors and whatnot that are underneath them are mentioned here, but it's these two, and Kaufman and Don Simpson feel confident that it is only these two that they're... them and their families are killed at the end and thrown into the lion's den. So it's these two men that are jealous because they were nearly passed over and knocked out of their high position in the government because Daniel was nearly appointed prime minister, a sole prime minister, and knocked them out. And then Daniel, of course, is an upright man, and he cannot be bought off. He's not corrupt as probably these other two are, and I think we're seeing that they are corrupt. Whenever you're going to have a man killed, you know that the people doing these things are corrupt themselves. But they couldn't get Daniel, and you know that may have been part of these things that they looked into to try to get him on. They probably tried to give him money if they could get some favors, some money under the table, things that politicians do today and have always done. But he wouldn't take any bribes or anything. And so this is the only thing they could come up with to get him on. And but this is who is one of the captives from Judah. So they're not even even recognizing that he is on par level with them, that he's just like a slave is how they're referring to him. And this Daniel does not show due regard for you, O king, for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And he immediately went to doing it as soon as he heard that this thing was done. Verse 14, and the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself. He knows he's made a huge mistake right here. And unfortunately, he dug his hole even deeper and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Now, what Don Simpson came up with in his book that he wrote on Daniel was This is a very similar circumstance to what Pilate found himself in with Jesus. He did not want to condemn Jesus. He wanted to let him go because he found no fault in him. But he caved in under the pressure, just as this King Darius caves in and relinquishes. So they're both in a very similar circumstance, and they both make the wrong decision and cave in. They both should have said, no, we're not condemning an innocent man. I don't care what kind of entrapment that you have set me and put me in. I'm not doing that. But anyway, they don't. Both Pilate and King Darius cave into these wicked men. So, verse 15. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the lion's den. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you continually serve, he will deliver you." Now, where did he get that thought into his head? None of the commentators commented on this, but I'm confident that he had heard about Daniel's friends years ago, that God saved them from the death penalty that was given to them. That had to be passed down to him. And this is also partly probably what gave him, Daniel, good amount of favor to this king, because he knows that his God is favoring him, and this Daniel is special, and his three friends were special. And so that I'm confident that this is where this statement comes from, is the knowledge to what happened to Daniel's three friends. And then also that Daniel has, God has interpreted people's dreams in the past, and then the previous king from Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. And so I'm confident that King Darius has heard all of these told to him about Daniel, and so he's confident, or hoping at least. He's not confident enough. He doesn't get any sleep this night, so he's not that confident, but he's hoping that God, the God that he serves, will deliver him, and he will not be executed and eaten by the lions during the night. So, verse 17, then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Okay, so now Daniel's going to be spending the night in the lion's den, and the king is going to have a sleepless night and worrying all night long, and he can't wait until sunup so he can go and find out if Daniel is dead or if his God saved him. Any questions or comments on this? Yes. 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 And Kaufman said he should have done it anyway. Yeah. Because if you have a wicked law, you don't compound it. If you make a mistake by getting yourself into a wicked, unjust law that's against God's will, God's law, then you get out of it. You don't continue and compound. But yes, and this was the way that their laws were written. If the king will sign a decree, then it cannot be changed. And these governors knew that, and they got him in a trap because of this. He had a choice. He could have said no and then dealt with the consequences of whatever that was, whether that meant he was going to be removed as king. Who knows? I don't know. Who knows what? Maybe he would get the death penalty, because he's really under this King Cyrus. From what I understand here, King Cyrus is the king of all of this Persian kingdom, and then King Cyrus has appointed King Darius over this Babylonian empire for, and they think maybe for a year or two. And so he's really underneath King Cyrus. And that's another thing that Kaufman felt like, why he didn't go back, because he's not full king. He's only king over this Babylonian empire. So that was also reasoning and explanation. But still, Kaufman said, he should have been strong enough and dealt with the consequences on the back end and not kill a just man, just as Pilate should have stood firm and said, no, I realize that you Jews out of envy are wanting to kill this just man. I'm not going to be a part of it. And I'm not washing my hands of it because I'm not going to get myself involved. If y'all are going to execute him, you execute him yourself. But I'm not going to give my approval at all. That's what he should have done. There would have been repercussions for him doing that. Those Jews would have hollered up to Rome, to Caesar, and Pilate very likely would have lost his governorship if he had done that. But anyway, that's what he still should have done instead of condemning a just man. But anyway, these are both examples of a just man getting condemned falsely here. Do what?
It was pressure.
Pressure from the crowd, both times. And we see that today. Politicians, it can go both ways. You can have good decisions pushed on a politician from the public, and then the politicians can also be pressured into bad decisions, wrong decisions from the public. So they're influenced definitely from public pressure, and that's what both of these men fell into.